In a time of lockdowns, thinking 40 hours ahead is sometimes a challenge. Now try thinking 40 years ahead. Well, that's what the federal government's done in its recently released fifth intergenerational report. It's taken a 40-year view on where we're going to be in 2061, and it's forecast that Australia is going to be older, smaller, and more in debt than it had thought it would be in previous intergenerational reports. Now, intergenerational reports are released every 5 years to offer a glimpse into the long-run health of our economy and our budgets. But as I said, predicting anything 40 years out is a challenge. And predicting what's going to happen to something as unpredictable as our economy and the budget settings it generates, that requires the most adept of crystal balls. Contrary to most media reporting, the only reasonable way to view an intergenerational report is as a hypothetical what-if modelling exercise. And as such, with any exercise like this, the predictions are completely meaningless unless you understand the assumptions on which they're based. So I'm looking forward to my regular chat with leading demographer Simon Kirstenmacher today, because I'm going to ask him to unpack the latest report and ask him what the findings mean for our economy and our property markets. And while we obviously can't tell you exactly what's going to happen in 40 years, it's good to have an understanding of what the government thinks is going to happen so you can plan to be a more successful property investor or business owner. So welcome to today's podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropol, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
What's ahead for Australia? Our property markets don't work in isolation. They're driven by our demographic changes. And according to the latest intergenerational report, in 40 years' time, Australia's going to be smaller, older, and more in debt. In fact, they've revised down the official projections in the intergenerational report. So I'm looking forward to discussing this and its implications with my regular podcast guest, leading demographer Simon Kirstenmacher, who's co-founder of the Demographics Group and a highly sought-after commentator in the media. Hello, Simon.
Nice to have me back.
Now, Simon, for those who don't understand, what is the intergenerational report and what's its purpose?
Well, it's a really big, fat government report. Doesn't that sound exciting?
Yes.
That is being published by bureaucrats and the treasurer in collaboration, essentially. And the main goal of the intergenerational report is to provide politicians with a really clear view and an honest view of the future, essentially so the Treasury knows how much money they can spend on a year-to-year basis. And that means that the intergenerational report needs to have a very solid base of demographic assumptions. And I am very, very happy and pleased with the demographic underpinning of the report. It's done by the Center for Population that runs out of the government. It's run by very capable people. So it's very interesting to see their thinking in regards to our future.
This must be one of the highlights of the year. The census is going to come later this year and the intergenerational report. Two big reports for you this year. Wow.
Absolutely. I got excited to play with the official assumptions simply because there is stuff like what kind of migration figures do people close to government actually assume? That's a nice little figure that we want to think about because that drives, well, demand for housing. It drives the level of GDP. It's just to a certain degree just linked to the number of people that come into the country.
Well, we're going to dig into it in a moment, but were there any big surprises in the report for you, Simon?
No, not per se. The basic assumptions, we always knew the general direction of the report, meaning we have fewer babies. That doesn't come as a surprise. It means that we will have fewer migrants coming in for quite a few years. That means we'll have a shrinking workforce that can create tax over the next couple of years. And because we're a rich and healthy country, we are going to continue to age. Our elderly population is not going to die prematurely, which is wonderful news, but it just means that the demographic mix of Australia is shifting a bit towards the older end of the spectrum. And then we need to think about how do we actually finance a society that looks like that.
Well, I can understand the importance of that for Treasury, for government, even though at the moment with COVID hitting us in all directions, it's hard to project out 40 hours, let alone 40 years. But it's suggested that the economic growth is going to be at a slower pace over the next 40 years than it's been over the last 40 years. They're saying GDP, a measure of our living standard, is expected to grow by an average of 1.5%, down from the earlier projected 1.6%. And clearly, population growth has substantially contributed to our economic growth over the last 30 years or so. But the pandemic's interrupted this, hasn't it? And the government stimulus has done the heavy lifting up to now. But I guess the government stimulus and the cheap money can't last forever.
No, it can't. And GDP does take a hit when you don't take the same number of people in. That's a no-brainer. Therefore, it's just interesting to see with what kind of migration level does Treasury plan into the future. What do they project? And it's 235,000 people per year on average, more or less, that Treasury assumes, which is essentially the pre-pandemic levels that we're dealing with. So the goal, quite clearly, is to go back to pre-pandemic levels. Some people will not like hearing this because they say we shouldn't get more people into Australia. We should make sure that all Australians here have jobs first and only then let migrants in. But I think they're missing a few points about how an economy works on a macro level, if you will.
Well, talking about population growth, then what they're saying is that it's going to be less than they projected last time. The previous intergenerational report said that in 40 years' time, we're going to have 40 million people. And now the 2021 update suggests 38 million people by 2060. The previous one had 40 million people 40 years from that one. But despite the reduction in this projected population growth, I think the trend's still monumental, Simon. If you think about it, it's taken Australia 200 years or so since European settlement to reach a population of 25.5 million. But in the next 40 years, our population will increase by 13.3 million, they're saying. In other words, increase by over 50%. This must have a massive impact on how our cities are going to live. It's going to be a lot for our town planners to deal with. I guess it's going to mean our way of living is going to change considerably. And of course, for business people and property investors who are listening to this podcast, it means strategic, knowledgeable investors should be well placed to capitalize on these changes.
Oh. Absolutely. In Australia, we're talking about orders of magnitudes beyond what European countries are growing, for example. There are plenty of opportunities to benefit from the population increase. We are talking about millions of people that in a very short period of time, if you think about it, need to be housed, that need to, you know, we need to produce electricity for them. We need to make sure their kids go to school and so on. They consume stuff. So it's a very good place to be here, because whatever your business model is really, you should be seeing the pie increase. That means a rising tide lifts all boats is certainly true in the Australian context over the next couple of years. But we, of course, want to be smart about this. You can still fail if you really tried, for example, if you provide the wrong type of housing in the wrong locations. You can still make a big fat loss rather than benefiting from the population increase.
Oh, sure, we know that despite population increasing and housing values increasing, 50% of people who get into property sell up in the first 5 years. And those who stay in, often by buying the wrong property, not financing it right, never get past their first investment. So a rising tide lifts all ships. But Warren Buffett finished that off, of course, by saying, but when the tide goes out, you see who's swimming naked. So yeah. We don't want to be, it's not a pretty sight, Simon, I can tell you. But the other thing the intergenerational report told us, and again, it's no surprise, is that we're going to be an aging population by 2060-61, again, in 40 years' time. About 23% of our population is projected to be over 65. 23% up from 16% at present and 13% in 2002. not only are we going to be living longer, I assume that improved health means we're going to be active longer. On the other hand, I guess a lot of people we know aren't in the right financial position to look after their retirement. So it means a lot of people are going to probably be working longer to be able to self-fund their retirement. So the structure of Australia's population is going to change. That'll have major impacts on, I guess, the health system, aged care services, retirement services, income. So the number of people over 65 is going to more than double in the next 40 years.
Absolutely. And that's the really, if you will, exciting or maybe scary thing that we need to be dealing with. We'll have a relatively smaller workforce looking after a relatively larger retirement cohort. So we need to think, how do we finance this? In theory, at least in Australia, retirement should be funded through superannuation, meaning we force everyone in Australia to put a tenth of the income or thereabouts into a little bucket. Then that accumulates over time. And if you had a high enough income, a successful enough working life, the super funds that you accumulated pay for your retirement. For those people that have enough money in their super, we don't worry about them. That's easy.
Most won't though, Simon. Do you remember a while ago there were those ads and they said this person's in this industry fund and this one's in the other fund? And at the end, in 30, 40 years' time, they're going to have $600,000, $800,000. And that's in today's dollar value. What are they going to have then? So I don't think most people are going to have enough in their super to fund what should be the longest holiday of their life, but could be a miserable time.
Absolutely. And the people who will not be able to fund this is the growing cohort of low-income workers. That means these are people who only earn a relatively small income and therefore 10% of that income, even if you have it sit in a very well-managed super fund over 30, 40 years, it does not create enough of a nest egg to get you through your whole retirement journey. That means in order for those people not to experience horrendous hard financial hardship, we need to top up their superannuation through the pension system. And that's an expensive exercise for Australia. So what we want to do as a country, we want to minimize, we can't completely get rid of it, but we want to minimize the number of low-income retirees, if you will. And if you think this through on a large scale and you're not afraid of being a bit outrageous, we say maybe we can completely eliminate low-income earners. And hear me out, it's not quite as brutal as I make it out to be.
Oh, well, that's an interesting thought. So let's hear what you've got to say. I'm prepared to hear you out.
So the idea is that
I'm interested in how you're going to eliminate them. I don't think it's
exactly. So we're not calling in the mafia or anything to help out with this task. And we're not going to do this with individual workers, but this is a transition over time. We're going to add or double down on robotics, on AI, on automation. Plenty of those low-income jobs are low-income because they are relatively simple and relatively repetitive tasks that are being done. Again, this is not a judgment of the individual worker or human being.
No.
But it just means if we can make sure that these work tasks are being done by an AI, are being automated, then these workers can actually be shifted into a higher level job where they earn more money, where they hopefully earn enough money to not having to rely on the pension system to finance their retirement. That, of course, then means in order to make sure that low-skilled workers can take a middle-skilled job, we need to upskill workers. That means all of a sudden we heavily rely on a successful TAFE system to get low-income workers into middle-income jobs. And therefore, I'm also calling for universally free TAFE education. We want to make sure that all hurdles that people might encounter when they pursue education, that they are taken away, that we upskill our low-income workers. And at the moment, there's a great opportunity, a window of opportunity, where we have very low unemployment figures in Australia, where companies of all skill levels are actually struggling to find the relevant skilled workers, where we can shuffle people up a level in the next highest hierarchy of jobs. And it's a monumental task to do this with the existing workforce. But ideally, we can set systems into place right now that ensures that a higher share of each high school graduation cohort gets into higher level jobs. that we automate those low-income jobs, that we don't even give people the opportunity to take a low-income job anymore.
Well, that's going to happen partly because those jobs are going to go anyway, aren't they? So therefore, some are going to go overseas, some are going to be done by artificial intelligence, AI. While Australia has grown to be a knowledge-based society and the skill level one and skill level two workers are earning more and they're going to be able to look after their future and they're going to be able to actually look after it during their lifetime as well because they can invest, we've lost that middle class, haven't we? And that's a shame.
It's a shame for moral reasons, for reasons of social cohesion. It's easier to have a socially cohesive country when you have a strong middle class, where you only have a few rich folks, a few poor folks, and there's the middle class that glues social society together. But if you have a shrinking middle class, you really want to do all you can to take the low-income workers back into middle-class jobs. And there's no reason that we can't have enough work for middle-skilled workers. We are very happy to heavily invest into infrastructure in Australia. The federal government has brought lots of infrastructure projects forward in the investment pipeline. So the money is there. But I'm quite afraid that we do not have enough skilled workers, middle-skilled workers, to do those jobs. So if I was a low-income worker at the moment in the gig economy, I would really look at TAFE and I would try to get into any kind of trade that is broadly associated with building our rails and roads that government is willing to put money on the table for.
So one way is to increase your education. Some people would also say another way is to import these higher skilled people from overseas.
Exactly. And so what we want to do in a country that runs on a skilled migration scheme is to get super highly trained, super specific skills into the country, simply because it's cheaper to get a couple of hundred folks of that specific niche into the country from abroad than to run the whole infrastructure of doing this. But we can't run a middle class based on overseas workers. If we want to really create a rich Australia for all, we want to make sure that the migrants that we let in are either international students because they will eventually become highly skilled, very specifically skilled workers, or already trained up professionals. I do think also it's a myth in Australia that we say we'll get all those low-skilled migrants into the country. Overall, the Australian migrant is actually higher skilled and better trained than the average Australian. And that's not because they are smarter per se, but it's because we select for that when we let migrants into the country.
Well, I appreciate your inputs on this report. I downloaded it. To be honest, I didn't read it all. I was looking forward to getting your input on it, and I've read your article on it in the New Daily where you regularly give your commentary on things. And so you've given us some insights. Any other tips that you got out of the intergenerational report that business people or investors should consider?
I think that any kind of business would heavily benefit from looking 40 years into the future. Just even if this is a mental thought experiment for an afternoon, just really think in the long haul. And if you are a young worker in your 20s or 30s, this is actually the future that you are looking at. So you want to make sure that you pick the right companies, you pick the right career fields to see how you can benefit from these changes. And remember that if it isn't for a pandemic, demographic forecasts are actually surprisingly accurate. So let's hope there are no other pandemics popping up and that these forecasts stay as precise as they can.
Well, they're accurate because at different stages of your life, you spend differently, you live differently, you start off costing the government money, you start off costing your parents money, and then you start earning some income, and then you eventually buy a property. And once your kids eventually leave, you've got more income. If you follow the demographic trends and where people are going to be in the future, that's a very useful way of seeing what's going to be required for businesses, for property, and basically for our economy.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm guilty of this myself. We talk a lot about generational changes. And if we talk about generational changes, it's very easy to overlook the generational truisms. Every generation will sooner or later settle down to have kids, will sooner or later retire. And with this general life cycle, sure, millennials procrastinated a bit and started the whole family bit a couple of years later. But overall, every generation, even if they reinvent the world in their own right, is doing a couple of things in the same way that people always have done. And so we do know when those waves are coming at us. And at the moment, it's, of course, the big millennial wave that will dominate the next 10 years in terms of creating families, in terms of creating housing investments and, you know, demand for white goods at barbecues.
Well, that's why I think we're very lucky that we're living in the best country in the world, because the demographics are in our favor compared to other countries, either poorer countries, or just look at what's happened in Japan where the demographics were against them.
Oh, absolutely. And Japan, for example, was very, very lucky that they became a high-tech country just before they started to age rapidly. So they could double down on automation, on robotics, or on betting on the right industries that are not labor intensive. They could then also change the whole social makeup. Before, you know, those demographic shifts, a young Japanese woman, once she married, would not go back to the workforce.
No.
But because there were no workers available, this social contract changed. And all of a sudden, it's okay for a Japanese mother to also be working. But that's just another sign that we as humans, we as societies, as economies, adjust to the realities that we are facing.
Well, some interesting times ahead. Let's see how correct these forecasts are. I'm not sure whether you and I will be doing this podcast in 40 years, but we'll be doing it again in a month. So I look forward to catching up with you then.
Fantastic. Catch you in a month.
In a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you, and I'm going to explain to you why the poor love to hate success. Sounds a bit strange, but it'll all make sense as I explain things to you. But before I do, I hope you got some benefit from my discussion about the intergenerational report with Simon, because it's going to give you some clues as to what's ahead in the big picture in the long term. And I think that's important to have. But of course, you've got to understand what's happening in the short term as well, a mixture of the micro and the macro factors. And if you want to really understand what's happening on the ground in our property markets, if you're looking for some direction and certainty, why not have a chat with my team at Metropole? Go to metropole.com.au and you can see our range of services, because we'll help you take advantage of this stage of the property cycle. It's not too late to take advantage of it, but not every property is going to increase in value, as the rising tide now doesn't lift all ships equally. So be careful. Property investment's a process. It's not an event. You can't just go out and buy a property and hope it's going to work. It's important to start by formulating a plan and getting the right advice and then implementing the plan. But getting holistic advice and getting independent advice at this stage is critical. Why not go to Metropole and get some direction, certainty, and results? I look forward to being part of your ongoing wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
Have you noticed there are two types of people in this world? Those who hate the success of others, and those who let the success of others fuel them towards their own greatness. Now, unfortunately, I found that most people fall into this first group. They don't like other people's successes. I guess that's why we call things the tall poppy syndrome, which is interestingly an Australian phenomenon. They don't see it overseas. They don't see it in the United States. So here's my free tip for you. Be in the second group. Be in that group of people who let the success of others fuel you to even higher greatness yourself. That's the way the rich think, while the poor revel in the failure of others. Some people look at other successes and failures as a way of validating their own greatness. They pick apart the reason why certain people achieve things, or they relish in a moment when others fail. Now, both of those paths lead to mediocrity. It's easy to spot those type of folks because they use words like luck. This is an ugly truth in life. There's a long list of people who'd rather complain than actually do something about it. And as for luck, I've always thought that hard work creates good luck. So take a quick assessment on how you respond to the success of others. Does it discourage you? Do you envy them? Don't allow yourself to be brought down by those hopeless emotions. Instead, allow other people's success to fuel your own fire. Let it allow you to achieve your own levels of greatness. If somebody else can do it, you can do it too. So today, pick out someone who's doing a great job, great work, compliment them for it. Muster up your sincerest praise and generously pour it out on somebody else. And the sooner you're able to recognize and praise greatness, the better chance you're going to have of replicating it. And when you succeed, know that some people will hate you for it. When you fail, some people are going to cheer. In fact, there's not a successful person out there who isn't in some way hated for their success. But the truly successful folks are the ones who can build something remarkable with the insults that are hurled their way. Have a think about that. That's the way to live your life. Revel in other people's successes and allow them to propel you to your own greatness. I hope you got some benefit from my chat with Simon Kirstenmacher and our discussion about the intergenerational report. Now, of course, these forecasts aren't going to come to fruition because there are going to be so many stumbling blocks and so many X factors along the way. Every year there's an X factor, something out of the blue that makes the best plans go out of kilter. Having said that, it's important to have a starting point and have a map of where you want to head. And if you did get some benefit, why not tell others about the Michael Yardney podcast? Please share the message so that we can make as many people as possible financially independent. If you got some benefit from it, why not tell the world by leaving a review on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to this podcast? Now, I've got another bonus for you, just my way of saying thank you for listening to the podcast. If you go to podcastbonus.com.au, I'd love to give you a range of ebooks and reports just to give you some more things for your success library to help you become a better informed investor. Podcastbonus.com.au. I'll leave a link in the show notes. Now, I'll be back again real soon, but you can catch me in between on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney. And in particular, please join my private Facebook group where every day I leave some commentary, some thoughts, a chart, something to help make you a more informed investor. Go to Facebook, look for the Property Update Facebook group, and let's walk this journey together. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?